What's up, Winona?
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 Thanks for joining us for episode 16 of What's Up Winona, the only podcast that keeps you on the up and up on what's going down in the Island City. It is Friday, December 14th, and I am Maddie Heim, the education reporter, and I'm going to update everyone on the district's upcoming lawsuit against Save Our Schools.
And I'm Tesla Mitchell, future reporter for the Daily News, and I'll be telling you about a really cool story about a Winona woman who took off from town and started her own show with her significant other, and they just won an Emmy on it.
And I'm Tobias Mann, crime and government reporter, and I'm going to be telling you a little bit about how law enforcement is handling situations with those suffering from mental illnesses or who are in an altered mental state.
So, Tobias, I think it's fair to say that, dealing with people with mental health issues is getting to be a really important part of police officers' jobs. So I'm interested to hear what you've been kind of uncovering about how that's all been changing.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, it's not just law enforcement's problem. It's the entire criminal justice system's problem. But this week, I really focused in on how local law enforcement are dealing with incidents involving people who have mental illness, who may be in an altered mental state because of drug abuse or alcohol abuse, or something that's changing the way they're thinking, and it was really fascinating talking to our sheriff's department and our police department about how they're handling those cases.
Mm-hmm. So how often is that a problem in Winona? How often do they run across stuff like that?
Well, I'm gonna answer that question in a different way. Talking to the Winona County Attorney, Karen Sonneman, on Monday, she and I were discussing the jail, which is going to be a big issue in 2019. The county needs to do something with that facility, whether that's replace it, upgrade it, what have you. But as part of that conversation, she brought up the fact that about 80% of the people going into the jail right now, 80% of arrests are people who are suffering from some kind of mental illness or mental illness and drug addiction or chemical dependency. And so it's the vast majority of people who are going into the system are suffering from some kind of mental illness.
Wow, that's a pretty large percentage.
Yeah, and law enforcement are aware of that. So when most cases they're dealing with, they are approaching it with some kind of understanding that they may have to mediate a situation, they may have to talk somebody down, and sometimes they don't have a lot of preparation or they may not be aware of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what are some differences that you found that the responses from police, if they know a person is having some mental health issues versus a person that they just, arrest on the street or, what
sure,
have you?
Sure. So you're getting to a really important point that both the law enforcement agencies that I talked to brought up. Most of the time when they're getting calls into dispatch about somebody, they've had prior contact with them. There's a history with that person and they have some idea of what they're going through, what they're struggling with, whether that's drugs or alcohol or mental illness or some combination thereof. They've gotten an idea of that. And so they approach it differently. That person may have a really bad experience with law enforcement.
Mm.
So the police department or the sheriff's department, depending on where it happened, might go out there with a plainclothes officer and a mental health professional. Or they might contact family members and talk to them and try to get an idea of how they're doing. And dispatch plays a big role in that too. Dispatch asks a lot of questions now about, are they feeling suicidal? Do they have any weapons? Do they have getting all the information they can out of whoever is calling. Sometimes they're calling in, Sometimes it's a family member or a neighbor calling in. But the more information they have, the better prepared they are to go into that situation.
Right.
And help that person. Because even if criminal charges follow because of something they did, the root cause of that comes back to, you know, what they were going through at that time.
Right.
If they're having a mental breakdown, you know, when that was happening, that's something that can be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And so how, you know, that gets into the other parts of the criminal justice system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I don't know if you looked into this for this story specifically, but I'd be curious to know, you know, on the back end then, once someone is arrested and put in jail, what kinds of mental health services can mm-hmm. they get then?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that I'll be looking at increasingly as we go into 2019. The conversation shifts back to what the county's going to do with the jail.
Right.
Because a lot of people working in the criminal justice system right now are seeing the huge number of people coming in who are suffering from drug addiction, and because of that, in you know, that drug addiction is oftentimes fueled by mental illness, which takes a lot of different forms. It can be high anxiety. It can be any number of things that are being medicated in an unhealthy way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are self-medicating.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but, you know, outside of Winona and going up into, you know, into Twin Cities, how law enforcement handles these situations, we talked about when they know what's going on.
Right.
You know, a lot of times, these officers are going in cold. They have no idea what the mental state of these people
right.
is. And, they have, you know, they don't know what to expect. They're prepared for anything. And they have to make sometimes really split-second decisions. Somebody walks out of the house holding a gun because, you know, they have no intention of hurting the officer maybe, but they have the gun in their hand because it's the one thing making them feel safe in that moment. The officer doesn't know that.
Right.
So they have to make these split-second decisions. And they have, you know, they have procedures that they're going through, and they're having to go through those snap, 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 snap. So in the Twin Cities, people have ended up dead because they walked out of the house holding a weapon.
Right.
And officers didn't know what to do other than to fall back on their training.
I'm curious to know whether or not there's a mechanism for people to let officers know even before there's an incident that maybe one of their family members has a mental illness that, you know, like, I'm thinking of, when, Bridget Klinger, the liaison officer, was talking to us about the Smart 911 app and, how that can really help people, that can really help law enforcement with understanding who's in your household, if there's animals, if there's, you know, what everybody's, kind of profile is. I wonder within that if there's a place to be able to put, like, this person suffers from schizophrenia
mm-hmm.
or this person has severe depression, just so, you know, so that before even the officer
right.
before hopefully they never get called, but
well depending on who's making the call, dispatch does try to get that information mm-hmm. out of whoever is making that call.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, the dispatch, you know, the person calling can't tell the dispatcher whether or not they have a weapon, they might, or whether or not they have a mental illness or something like that, whether they're schizophrenic or whatever, the caller might be able to say, yeah, they have a shovel and they're swinging it around, or they've mm-hmm. got a bat, or they're holding a gun.
Right.
And then police can then take a different approach. They can slow things down, they can back it up, they can do different things that helps them de-escalate the situation.
Hmm.
But yeah, dispatch, you know, any way that the officers can get more information. But sometimes, like in the case this summer, Daryl Jackson was tried. He, in 2016, during the summer of 2016, was stopped for suspected of drunk driving. The officer walked up to the car, and Jackson, depending on who you talk to, pulled a gun on the officer. They don't know whether or not he's trying to just show the officer that he had a firearm, but was drunk and not the smartest thing to do in that moment.
Right.
But the officer opened fire because all of a sudden there was a gun in his face.
Right.
And Jackson was wounded and he took off, and there was a standoff where he was threatening to take his own life. on near the intersection. I think it was Highway 43 and the I-90 on-ramp. He was stopped there because the sheriff's department laid out stop sticks and blew his tires, and he was stuck. And sitting in his car for like an hour, talking to a sheriff's deputy, who was trying to talk him down and get him out of there. And they got him out of there. They talked him out of the car and got the gun away from him, and they were able to get him help. And he finished his trial this summer, and he's acquitted of the most serious charges. And he was only actually convicted of fleeing the officer. A bad situation that ended better than it could have.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we have an advantage here in Winona rather than being in a bigger city, just because officers know more people and have an understanding of their community a little bit better.
Well, I mean, I think there's probably some of that where mm-hmm. the officers are dealing with people they're familiar with.
Right.
And hopefully are able to build a rapport, especially with people who repeatedly have issues with the criminal justice system. So at least then they, you know, even if they still have to be taken in, they can have a decent relationship with the law enforcement officers who are taking them in. One of the problems that I talked to Tom Williams at the police department, he's the deputy chief there, he said that a lot of people associate the uniform with getting arrested, bad experiences.
Yeah.
And that's something that's not going away.
Right.
That's a societal issue that's not going to be fixed overnight. And so whatever they can do to build that rapport with people who have a history and learn as much as they can about those people, so they kind of, the officers kind of have an idea of what to expect.
Right.
At least can keep terrible things from happening and hopefully get those people to the next stage of the criminal justice system and get them help.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's great that they're kind of looking at how they can improve stuff, and I'm sure it'll keep evolving in the future. So
yeah, and actually this year is the first year that all officers need mental health training and awareness is part of their relicensure. Every 3 years they have to be relicensed.
That's awesome.
And that's part of a piece of legislature that went through that was approved in 2017. It was a massive increase in funding for training for officers, but in order to get that funding, they had to make sure that they were getting a substantial amount of mental health mm-hmm. awareness and diversity training and being able to prepare. And that training is not light. They go for like 4 days and for 8 hours a day, nothing but that training.
Wow. That's awesome. Well, I'm personally excited to hear
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
that's good.
It's
more tools, the better you know, more knowledge.
Especially now that we're better aware of that.
Right.
This is such a core part of our criminal justice system and a problem that it's facing.
Yeah.
All right, Tesla. I hear you have a Emmy-worthy story for us.
I do. So Samantha Rossin, R-O-S-S-I-N, I'm not sure how we pronounce that. But anyway, she's from Winona, born and raised. And she left at about 18 to go to college and stuff. And she ended up meeting Brandon T. Adams. And they got together and they came up with this idea. They're partners. And they came up with the idea of just like, let's travel the country and stuff. And
sounds like a good plan to me.
Right, yeah. And so they really wanted to focus it around shooting a video. And something that they've kind of been pondering was, you know, what is success? What is successful? And so they started this show called Success in Your City. And it's all about traveling the country and finding different success stories that aren't the common, like, fame, money, and recognition type stories.
All right, give us an example.
Okay, so one of the ones that they shot about was a homeless guy. I think it was in Boston. And he was homeless but had this dream of starting a orchestra for kids. And so he's like working on this dream almost a little bit more than working on
his own life.
Yeah. And so he was like meeting with like these big CEOs and stuff like that, asking for, you know, help with this orchestra, and then going and sleeping behind like the Marine Center or something like that. And like sleeping on a bench kind of thing. But he ended up doing it.
Well, it's cheaper than a house.
But. Yeah. Right. And so he ended up starting this orchestra. He got like violins and stuff that had been donated. And so the whole point was to help kids that were in underserved areas. And so he got it going, and now it's like a big, huge thing for these kids.
So he played musical benches so he could make a musical ensemble.
Yeah. And it's so cool. So, you know, and so that was one of their stories, because they're showing through these different stories that that success can be finding fulfillment in what you're doing right now, or, you know, of what your dream is, and that your dream doesn't always have to be like fame and a big house. And I really like the homeless story as well, because I think sometimes we feel like we absolutely have to have these certain things before we can even start to look at our dream. You know, but here's this guy who doesn't even have a place to call home, who's working on his dream, like, you know.
Yeah, I've never gotten that, though, because I've always, you know, felt like if you aren't living your dream in some way, some small way in your life, and you're putting it, or if you're putting it off, you're not really living.
Right, like, yeah.
For me, I have to write all the time, so this job is a dream for me.
Right.
So that's enough in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But so, people who wait, I can't understand.
Yeah.
So how many cities have they gone to?
So they did a total, they were hoping to do 12, but, you know, like many people, when you have an idea and you go out there and then you suddenly realize how hard it actually is, they were only able to do 5, but that was a huge success in itself, and this was all a real huge journey for them as well, and finding their own success. So I think it was after talking with the homeless man and hearing his story that they decided, you know what, we have a lot of stuff and we don't actually need it. So they sold their house and like 90% of their stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, and decided to like travel to these different cities for a 12-month period. And as awesome as that sounds, it was not easy.
I bet.
That'd be terrifying.
Yeah, it would be terrifying. And I kind of talked to them about that because I wanted to get to the the real part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's easy for people to be like, yeah, it was a great adventure. It was really impactful, and we're excited for this, you know, this show that we created. But, you know, I know that there's another side of that, and I'm really excited that they were willing to talk about that. Mm-hmm. You know, Sam, the woman from Winona, she talked about how the second city that they went to, they didn't realize that there was a big music festival that was happening. And so they weren't able to get like temporary housing or anything, because just everywhere was filled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up living in a hotel for a month
with no
oven, you know. And although that sounds cool in some ways, she's like, I cried a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and she talked about how she felt like, you know, she wanted to go back home. This was before they sold their home. But, you know, that there was a real couple defining moments of like, are we going to go back home and give up on this dream? And thankfully they didn't. They pushed through, you know. And I'm also thinking about the dynamics of them being in a relationship at that point, you know, being also stuck in a hotel in a city that you're not familiar with, and also trying to shoot a show and like find these inspiring stories.
Talk about a personal crisis while you're telling stories about personal crisis.
yeah. But the show is called Success in Your City, and at the end of it, or towards the end of it, after shooting numerous episodes, they decided, you know, let's just go ahead and enter it in for an Emmy Award, you know, just on the off chance. And I mean, sure, there's like thousands of them and stuff, and the one that they won was for the lower 13 states. It's basically a regional Emmy. So mm-hmm. it's not like the same Emmy that you would be watching on TV, like with all the famous people and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's in the same line. It's just, you know, a smaller category of that.
Tesla. To me, an Emmy is an Emmy.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. And they talked about how, Brandon especially talked about how since winning that Emmy, now suddenly, you know, producers and stuff are suddenly taking them so much more seriously because, you know, it was a huge recognition and it is. And, you know, so now they're in the midst of talking to different networks mm-hmm. to see, you know, who can show the show. And they're hoping to have it for the public for early 2019.
Yeah, I was going to ask. This sounds really awesome, and I want to see not only the stories they tell, but their personal journey.
Yeah, because that's part of it too.
So when again was it going to be?
2019. So first they're going to go, and once the show has been, you know, has gotten a network, then they're going to go back to the cities that they were at and have small. Or not small, but they're going to have, like, premiere, what's it called, where you show it for the first time? There's a word for it.
Premiere is actually
premiere. Yeah, okay. I think that's
Well, that premieres. One thing. Yeah, so they're going to basically go to each city and do a small, you know, or an opening for that city because they were a part of it. And then after they've gone back to all the cities, then they'll open it up for everyone else to see. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, what an exciting thing. And then they actually, like, Brandon proposed and then they actually got married along this whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and it's really helped them redefine their own success. So Sam, she is a personal trainer and like fitness coach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I can relate to this as well. It's really easy to get caught up in trying to find followers and stuff, especially like on Instagram.
Oh my goodness. And it's such a trap.
It is such a trap. And it can be, she talked about how it can be really easy to judge your success based on your followers. And she had to really take a step back and be like, you know, it's not so much how many followers, because the bigger the amount of followers, the less she's actually reaching personal people, mm-hmm. you know. And
it's not the quantity, it's the quality.
Yeah. And that really helped her redefine her own success.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. I wonder what they would say is success in Winona.
Yeah, I'm hoping that they come here because, you know, I don't know if they're planning to do more in the future, but I just think that would be so cool to, especially since Sam is from here, to like come back and...
Yeah, like a hometown thing.
Yeah, so I'm pretty pumped. All right, so Maddie, I know you've been following this story for a long time now. So tell
us
about
the story that never ends.
Yeah. What's the newest update on the Save Our Schools stuff?
Yes. So, yes, it has definitely been a roller coaster. So, actually, this week, it has kind of been at just a tiny little standstill because, so last Thursday, the public school board voted to basically say, okay, lawyers, go ahead, like, sue Save Our Schools. But as of today, they have not filed that lawsuit yet. So
interesting.
Yeah, that gave me some time to kind of dig in a little bit and see what the effects of this lawsuit could be or which way experts are going to say that they think it'll go.
Right.
So that has been really interesting. So again, just to kind of quickly recap what this new lawsuit is about. This new lawsuit involves the original Court of Appeals appeal that Save Our Schools filed saying basically the district moved way too fast in closing the schools and they should have gone slower. And when they filed that appeal with the Court of Appeals, then what happened next is they attached the Liz Pendens notice, which again is a notice that there's pending litigation open on these properties. They attached it to the titles of the school, the buildings. And now the district is suing to try to get that Liz Pendens off.
Right.
So I talked with an attorney named Peter Coyle, who is from the Minneapolis area. And he is, among other things, he does a lot of real estate law. And he actually told me that he has, previously he worked on a bunch of stuff with the Duluth School District, kind of going over the same kinds of things, school closing, school consolidation. The community was very unhappy with it. So he was kind of able to shed some light on what he thinks might happen. And he said that, you know, again, objectively as a third party viewer, so he doesn't have any stake in this, but he thinks that the district will pretty easily take this as a win for themselves because, so apparently in order to file a Liz Pendens, you have to have, I think he said, you have to have an ownership interest in what happens to the property. And so my initial understanding, this has been great for me because I didn't know anything about, you know, real estate law, but I thought
that... crash course in real estate law.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I thought that anyone could file a Liz Pendens, but it turns out that in order to file it, you have to have an ownership interest or like basically a legal interest in the property. Like you,
gotcha.
This party has to be interested. And having a lawsuit open while that's an interest and while Save Our Schools is clearly very emotionally invested in what happens and very emotionally interested, he said that that's probably not going to be high enough to clear the bar of what you have to be to file a Liz Pendens.
The only thing that like that I can think of though that would help them in the idea of ownership is that they're taxpayers.
Yeah.
And that they've been paying taxes to the school district. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, it's definitely, it's very fuzzy. And again, I'm definitely right. not saying that that's the way it's going to go. You know, we're still right. really early on in the process. The lawsuit hasn't even been filed yet.
Right.
I mean, but I mean, like when school districts sell old schools, I mean, that's part of the reason why you see school districts sell for $150,000, $200,000, $300,000. You know, these multi-million dollar facilities that, you know, were they empty factory building would still sell for millions of dollars. I mean, a lot of the reason is to encourage people to just come in and repurpose those buildings so that they can continue being a part of the community.
Right.
So I think the price is some part of that too.
Yeah. And I mean, so then from there, once I learned that, or while I was kind of doing that digging, I also went and talked to the representatives from Save Our Schools, one of whom is Doug Saltzman. And he had said that, because I asked him, I was like, do you think that you guys had the legal grounds to go for this and file the Liz Pendens? And he said, absolutely. He thinks, so this kind of brings another legal element into things. He thinks that this lawsuit from the district is something called a slap suit, which is a super fun name. But what it basically means, what it stands for is it's a strategic lawsuit against public participation.
I didn't realize
it was an acronym.
I thought it was a comic stream, kind of like Batman.
Unfortunately, no, it's an acronym. But basically what a slap suit is, a business or a government body files a lawsuit, against someone that's trying to do something in the public interest, and they're not so much concerned with whether they'll win or lose the lawsuit, but it's more about taking the resources and the time of the other party, which often doesn't have as much resources as this business. So that is what, not the Save Our Schools attorney, he had no comment, but what one representative from the group said he thinks that it definitely is, and kind of expressed a lot of disappointment in the district that they would do that against kind of a group of concerned citizens. And I'm still waiting on a comment back from the district, just kind of responding on that. So yeah, I mean, the jury's really out on that. Slap suits definitely exist. I think the district would probably say, you know, no, we're filing this because they did not have legal grounds to go after this. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's just a roller coaster, and I'm going to be continuing to follow it.
So what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to be the next step? I mean, is it going to be actually filing the case, which from my understanding, the school district hasn't actually filed quite yet?
Yep. Yeah, I think that definitely will be the next step, and I have been checking the court database every day. And yes, I think that's absolutely the next step in this process for sure. And then just for people who are paying attention to that original suit, it's not a lawsuit, Court of Appeals appeal, the oral arguments for that are on January 23rd. So that is coming up as well.
So it's not going to be over anytime soon.
No. And after those oral arguments, the Court of Appeals has 90 days to decide, and they could take all 90. So, no, it will definitely not be over soon.
Something tells me it's not going to take all 90.
We'll see.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for joining us for episode 16 of What's Up Winona, the podcast. And you can find us on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Radio Public, or anywhere else that you get your podcasts. And if you can't find us at your favorite podcast app or location, just let us know on our Facebook page, on our Twitter, or however else you connect with the Winona Daily News. You can find all of the stories that we discussed today in the description below. And I hope everyone has an awesome weekend.